You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
This is David Rovics, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Welcome to the Climate Action Show. Getting involved in climate change just feels like adding another bad thing to your life, honestly. There's a lot of bad news, there's not a lot of good news, and the things that individuals can do to solve climate change often feel very small and sometimes a bit futile, so it's hard to stay in it to win it. I've been thinking about what Shay was saying during our Radiothon show, which, listen back if you want to, it was really good, it was really fun. She was talking about thinking deeply about the climate crisis, but not really feeling useful, despite being in the middle of our Radiothon show, where we were literally in the middle of raising $1,000 for like a climate change news service, and contributing so much to the Climate Action Show every single week. I honestly think that like 100% of people in the climate movement, from politicians to scientists to people like Greta Thunberg, feel like they're being not effective enough because climate change is still happening. And it's really, really happening despite all our work. And the whole conversation during Radiothon just made me think, well, what does Shay think is effective? Like, who is an effective person if it's not Shay? And like, how does a person even get started in doing useful climate things anyway? If like talking on the radio isn't a useful thing to do, if like being a committed activist for years isn't a useful thing to do, if like thinking and talking about climate change, recycling, riding a bike, eating a vegetable, all those things isn't enough for climate change, what is actually enough? And so today in this live show, we're going to be talking about like very small, very easy, very low-key entry points into climate action. From the point of view of people who like to sit around talking about stuff instead of doing stuff, but really want to feel more useful. So this is a show about leveling up your climate action, whether you got out of it during the pandemic and you want to get back in, or whether you've been thinking about things and listening to the Climate Action Show but find it hard to get out there because you're not really sure what to do or who to do it with, or if you're involved in climate action in some way but feel like, you know what, you've got the capacity to do a little bit more. You've got a little bit of spare time. You've got a little bit of spare money. You've got a little bit of spare energy. You've got something, and you want to put it towards the greatest scientific, moral, ethical, practical, and impractical problem of our time. So we're going to talk a little bit about our journey and the things that we've tried, the things we haven't tried, what's worked and what hasn't worked. And then we're going to talk to some people who are involved in getting people involved in climate activism, and what they do to help people get involved in the movement and then help people stay in the movement. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I guess I've always cared about environmental stuff, from like a really early age. I guess I was an only child and I like trees. during, I don't know, the big climate activity of like 2010, like the youth movement, that sort of thing. I started to go into protests. I started getting involved in stuff that was happening at uni. And then when XR took off, like I was really optimistic about this movement. I thought, gosh, they've got some good graphic design. I thought they've got some clear ideas. They've really got a lot of momentum going in the UK. They took over a bridge. That was really impressive to me. I thought, these are people who can get stuff done. And like going to their information session where they said that like only 3.5% of people need to do something in order for political change to happen, like that was a relief to me. That was a relief for me to hear, because it seemed like a lot of people were kind of like quite worried about things but not really doing anything about things. So I thought, if we can just get this like minimum threshold of people to do a little thing, then yeah, we can actually start working on this problem that everyone wants to solve, but no one really knows how to, while like adding another chore on the list of things to do. So I got really involved in them for a while. I was part of the art space, mostly, like going to protests and doing the rah-rah, but mostly doing behind-the-scenes stuff, like painting the posters, painting the, the fabric things? Banners? Mm. Yeah, painting the banners. I've still got, like, I'm going to mention this every single show, I've still got a full-size Perspex coffin in my shed. It's taking up room. Please take it from me. I don't want it anymore. we made a lot of dioramas. We splashed about in the NGV pool, that sort of thing. Getting involved in the Red Rebels, helping with their makeup, doing some of the goth stuff. But I ended up, I don't know, volunteer organizations, like they'll take as much as you can give. And you don't know how much you can give until you hit your limit. Sometimes. And so I really hit my limit. I got burnt out, and then there was the pandemic, and it felt like just everything fell apart, and there was a new emergency to worry about for a long time. There was like stuff happening online, but like I was doing a PhD as well. I was busy. So I really fell out of things, and I fell out of touch with people, the people I was doing things with. And then after the is there after a pandemic? I don't know. Now, I started getting more involved in climate stuff because turns out climate change is still a thing. I got it back into it through volunteering here at 3CR, not VCR, 3CR, and weirdly enough, gardening. I started working on my own garden at my own house, and to plant a garden is to believe in the future. And once you're thinking about the future, you think about climate change. Mm. So I'm thinking about like, what's a resilient garden? How am I going to protect my wildlife? What are my possums going to be needing in 50 years to cope with the new nature of climate change? To think in terms of these timescales means that like you have to factor climate change in. Mm. And I found what was successful is like I joined a gardening group. It's a really good group. We talk about this stuff. We're going to talk about this stuff all the time. And it's like a regular group of people who I can hang out with, and we care, and we're doing fun stuff. Like we're doing gardening stuff. We're not like sitting around reading the news. We're not like sitting around bitching about climate change and like thinking about like that time in 2050 when we're all going to be on fire. No, we're doing fun gardening stuff. We're regularly getting together to do a little thing. With the 3CR, with this climate action show, I try to use my sense of humor in things. There's not a lot of funny stuff about climate change, but some of it's pretty funny, you know. There's, you know, it's hot. I'm hot. Things are hot. and connecting with people who are on my level, like I guess people who are like in my sort of situation in life, like people who are like creatives and artists, people who are into the things that I'm into, and I don't know, who want to do, like, I don't know, knitting for climate or like drawing for climate, you know, people who have a similar to me and want to do similar things. And then we just make climate change a part of that. That's been a way that I've been able to get back into climate stuff, but not burn out so far. I guess another thing has been like the philosophy of it. Like during XR, I was getting a bit overwhelmed. Like it's very existential. There's the whole future of the world at stake. I really like echidnas and stuff. During the summer bushfires, like there were so many bad images and bad news. That definitely contributed to the burnout, just like going outside and seeing the orange sky. And feeling kind of responsible for it, feeling like, I don't know, if I just like volunteered an extra hour, if I just like ate even more vegetables, I don't know. Yeah, if I didn't have that takeaway coffee cup, then I felt like I should be doing everything. But knowing that I could only do so much, and that, you know, it's not my fault. Like, this whole thing is not my fault. It's other people's fault. I'm angry at them. That's actually really helped. Yeah. So Shay is here laughing at me and my feelings.
I'm here.
But how did you come into all of this? What happened to you?
Yeah, I was thinking when you were talking about, I was thinking before I came here what I would say and little things that I do to make me feel like I'm doing stuff. But then I just kept thinking and when you're talking about the philosophy of it, I just kept thinking, what is this whole need to be effective? Where does this come from? Mm. To me, it sounds it sounds quite capitalistic. It sounds quite patriarchal to be doesn't sound very patriotic. To be I have to do something, or I have to have this very actionable output, or kind of this, I have to produce a very tangible outcome in terms of but not just activism. I think in other areas of life, sometimes we feel we have to keep working and producing something.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I think because I was feeling very burnt out by feeling I wasn't doing enough. But I think, this need to produce something or to contribute in some way to fight against something or fight for something. I think it actually seems like it comes from this growth narrative or kind of capitalistic narrative of we have to work and produce something. And actually I think that's the opposite of what climate activism should be, because really the cause of climate change is this kind of mindset that we have to grow and we have to produce and we have to keep working and working. And I don't know, I thought maybe it would be more productive if we slowed down, took a minute, because we're getting burnt out and it seems we're trying to fight against climate change and we're trying to dismantle, what's the saying, we're trying to dismantle the master's house with the master's tool or whatever. We're all getting burnt out because we're all feeling we're not really doing enough. And then it just makes me think, why do we have this need to do, consistently to do and to consistently contribute, when that is the kind of mindset that in some ways got us into this problem, if I'm making any sense.
Yeah. So what you're really saying is Ducky and Angus will be taking over the rest of the show.
Exactly.
From now on.
Degrowth. Yeah. But I think it's good to have this kind of, I'm definitely not saying we all need to just sit back and watch the world burn, but I think there needs to be a bit more of a kindness on ourselves and maybe a rejigging of how we think about these things, of needing to do and needing to have an outcome or to have this kind of tangible result of your activism, because activism is it's many and, I don't know what the word is. It's there's so many different ways you can engage in activism. Just reading a book is an activism, I think. Changing the way you think or changing the way you experience nature or a certain relationship with an echidna, you said, is activism in a way. So, I guess my point is that I was getting to this point where I was feeling so burnt out by not feeling like I was doing enough.
Mm.
And then I kind of had to just think, but why am I thinking that way? And is that way of thinking actually really productive to real change making?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, to give an answer, I don't have one. but I think there's other ways as well that I will, if I'm feeling burnt out, sometimes I'll just sit and cry. I know that sounds really dramatic and depressing, but I think sometimes if you just are feeling overwhelmed, because there's, and like you were saying, there's so many problems happening, and I think there's this overcomplexity of,
the poly crisis,
everything that's going on, and we're feeling I feel like it's, attacking our nervous systems, the overcomplexity of it all, that we're shutting down or not knowing we're stretched too thin. And if you're someone who cares, which is the vast majority of people, you're feeling you don't know where to put your energy. And so then just cry. I would suggest just cry and get it all about, everything out, all of your emotions. And then you can come back to I don't know, a bit more productive state of being, I guess. Dancing's the other thing I would suggest as well.
Crying and dancing crying, at the same time?
Yes, at the same time. And you have to do it at the same time, otherwise it doesn't work. But yeah, I was talking to, in an interview I did with Sarah Wilson, which you can listen back to on 3CR. She was talking about like how, she was talking about all this stuff as well, and that's what she does. She just dances, and she's like, there's a way of like release and catharsis, but also like a way of learning and understanding that comes through movement that really just you can't get through like certain like I guess logical kind of left brain ways of learning. And so I think that, yeah, I'm not gonna I think people should just listen to that interview. I'm not gonna repeat what she's saying.
So what we might think of activism is like going out in the street with a placard. Like
it does, actually you can dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think activism, yeah, activism, there's so many different ways that activism can be active. You know, there's a lot going on. And so it doesn't have to always be like protesting or like writing to an MP or, yeah, like you said, eating a vegetable, or buying an electric vehicle, because like who can do that? But it's, yeah, there's just other ways to make yourself feel a little bit more like you're contributing to things that does not necessarily have to be in the way that you know activism to be, if that makes sense. And the other thing I would suggest is that the Climate Action Show needs more people. So if you want to join the show and talk and talk to us and talk about what you do in climate activism, then that is another opportunity as well.
You could be here now.
Yeah.
Rather than sitting in your comfy home.
And it's better to be here. So yeah, that would be, yeah.
You can tell this is a Monday show because it's just all like abolish work.
Yeah, literally.
Stop being productive.
Yeah.
Let's go home. Let's just go home and cry.
Yeah. That would be what we suggest. But
so how did you get over your burnout?
Well, yeah, crying was one thing, but also just like I think what helped for me was studying eco-philosophy and learning about, I guess, like not learning to think in such, or changing the way I was thinking firstly about ecology, about nature, about the environment, about climate change, about activism. So that helped to like kind of rejig everything I thought I knew what I was doing as a climate activist. I thought I knew what I was doing. Like I was a part of all the right groups and I was protesting and I thought I was a very good climate activist, if that makes sense. But then I studied philosophy and like learn about how people are approaching this in very, very different ways. And the way I think forward, I guess, would be to... Yeah, I think we need to change basically in a lot of ways the way we hold relationships, especially in this, like, in the Western world, especially, like, in this system that we're in. So that was what got me out of the feeling burnt out. I mean, there's, a lot of books and magazines and articles and stuff like this that also kind of helped me in that way. And then, yeah, doing this show, actually, as well, I feel... just like really interested in how I can talk about climate change differently. And it's nice to have a platform to do that because, yeah, I mean, there's obviously not many, or I don't think there's any dedicated climate change media really, except us. We're the only ones, and we're the best ones. But I think this has felt very productive for me, but not in like a productive sense of like, oh, I am now doing something and I'm contributing and I'm active. It's more just that it has felt calming to be in a space where I can just like sit and chat, because that's what I love to do.
So. You know what's good, rather than just like there's a rally this weekend, there's a rally next weekend. It's just like you've got a 1 hour radio show that you need to do once a month.
Yeah.
And there's a deadline. Like it's very structured. It's very... like time limited, And like you know exactly what you're doing and how much you need to do, and you don't need to do any more than that.
Yeah.
That's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I came onto this like program with like the idea for one or two shows maybe. And I was like, oh, I'll just do one or two because I don't really know what else I'm going to talk about or what else I'm going to say. And then things like really flow and emerge once you get interviewing one person and then talking to another person, or like talking to, you know, when we just talk amongst ourselves, you start to have all these other ideas for like really interesting stuff. So yeah, I think that's definitely where I feel I come in. I'm trying to like bring a bit more of a way of thinking into this show, bit of a different way of thinking, Yeah, it is, like you said, if you've got one show a week or a month or whatever it may be, and you just try and make it like as good as you possibly can, and hopefully there's someone out there listening, but I don't know, I think maybe it's just my mum and dad.
Hello to Shay's mum and dad. Thank you for all of the Radiothon donations.
Yeah.
Something that I was going to recommend for someone who's been burnt out or is just starting in climate activism is really just starting small, like buy a pin, wear it on your shirt, buy a t-shirt, wear it walking down the street, walk it like to the supermarket, like mention climate change once to a friend when they're talking about retirement or the future. And if you're part of a hobby group already, like, I don't know, like knitting or like dog walking or competitive howling or like doing meth, just like see how your group can get involved in climate change from there. Like, can you knit some like climate change scarves? Can you walk down to an area and pick up some litter with your dogs? Can you recycle your syringes? That sort of thing. Like, and see if you can meet up and help other groups. Like, maybe you can knit scarves for like some people who were going on a protest, or maybe you can do some competitive howling outside Parliament supporting some like First Nations people or something. Yeah, see who else you can hook up with in your local area who are also like a small local group, and like build solidarity that way, because we're going to need networks of communities in the climate change apocalypse. So
it starts with community.
It's good to make friends. Yeah. We're going to go to a song. Would you like to announce it?
Yeah, this is I'd Love to Change the World by 10 Years After.
And then we'll be talking to Linda, who works at Outreach at the Darabin Climate Action Network, about her journey and what she would recommend to level up people in activism. In these chaotic times, it's important to stick together. And now you can, with Climate Action Show stickers! If you've already donated, head down to 3CR and pick one up at reception, or we can even post one to you if you want to send your details to climateaction3cr@gmail.com. Otherwise, pop into 3CR reception and pick one up for a gold coin donation.
Welcome back to the Climate Action Show on 3CR 855 AM. My name is Shay, and you're in the studio today with me and Antimony. That was I'd Love to Change the World by 10 Years After, and it is a song I chose for this show.
We're going to be talking with Linda. She heads the outreach team for the Darabin Climate Action Network, which is a local group in Melbourne's northern suburbs that holds a variety of low-key and sometimes high-key community events. Linda, tell us your story of getting involved in climate action.
Oh, hiya, Antony, and thanks for having me on the show. It's weird being on 3CR again. I was involved in 3CR in the between the, maybe the 90s and into the 2000s for about 15 years. And it's great that this show is still going.
Or it's terrible.
Oh, it's terrible, that's right. I got involved years ago. I've been listening, and I feel as though I'm at the other end of activism, really, because I come from a family where activism was normal. My parents were in the the trade union movement and the peace movement. So going to rallies and demonstrations was sort of like, was just normal for me in my youth. And I remember I'm retired now, so I grew up when the Vietnam War was raging. And so going to the moratorium of over 100,000, hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of around Australia in the early 70s was just astounding. It was just an amazing experience. And, of course, those sorts of demonstrations or marches of people were common also in the 80s with the Palm Sunday rallies that were Friends of the Earth was involved in. So I feel as though I've been active, an activist, almost all my life. But it really galvanised me when I was living in the UK for a number of years in the 80s, that the campaigns that we were involved with were the anti-basis campaigns, because there were the military bases in the UK held Trident missiles. I don't know if you know about the Greenham Common vigils.
No, tell us about it. It would take
another show. But Greenham Common and Upper Hayford are two military bases close to London, and there are a lot of actions around those military bases against the Trident missiles. And remember, nuclear war was still very close. I mean, there was nuclear testing in the Pacific until about, I think it was about 96, the last underground test by the French in the Pacific, and China was letting off bombs into the 90s. So the Maralinga was still fresh, because Maralinga was being, you know, still very, very radioactive in the 80s. It's been cleaned up since, but it's still radioactive. So when you're standing at a military base and you can see a silo and you think, I know that there's a Trident, or the possibility that there's a Trident missile in that silo, it's very sobering. When I came back to Australia in the mid-80s, my sister actually had got involved with a movement against uranium mining, which is a really dynamic group against uranium mining in Australia for about 30 years, from the 70s through to the early 2000s. And she was also in the Friends of the Earth Anti-Uranium Collective. So I thought, well, this is easy for me. I'll just slot in here, because I thought I can't just go to rallies and marches. I felt as if I needed to be more active, and that's what I did. So as an active member of Friends of the Earth, it wasn't full-time, but an active member of Friends of the Earth for over 20 years, maybe 25, 30 years. I can't remember.
But have there been times... Oh, sorry, you go.
Oh, well, I was going to say also, the Radioactive Show, which is still a show on 3CR, been going for a very long time. That was produced from the late 80s through to the early 2000s by Eric Miller from the Movement Against Uranium Mining, and I anchored for Eric for over 15 years. And it's fantastic that that show's still going, the Radioactive Show, 10 o'clock Saturday morning. But it's awful that it's still needed, because, you know, the nuclear threat's still there, still active. So anyway, being, I suppose after I retired in 2019, I hadn't been so active for a couple of years because of family and work and maybe even health issues. But I serendipitously met a friend who was involved in DCAN, Darabin Climate Action Now, and also I remember Extinction Rebellion was just starting up in 2019. And so I did a lot of stuff with Extinction Rebellion and started getting involved with DCAN. And now I'm the anchor for the outreach group, for DCAN's outreach group, and we're pretty active.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Have there been times where you've done less and done more? And what was it like to get back into things after not doing as much?
Yeah. Well, done less in my early life, just sort of being someone who came along, you know, tagged along to demonstrations or whatever. Then getting involved, really deeply active in Friends of the Earth Anti-Uranium Collective, really, really active. That's another show as well. And then falling away a bit as work got to really took up most of my time, work, family. I think when I retired, it was a natural thing for me. I've been tired. I felt tired, but I've never felt burnt out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I know a lot of activists do feel about burnout, and I do understand, and I think it's connected to, I think it's connected to climate grief, really. I think climate grief is a very real thing for activists, and I think that's what burns you out more than anything, feeling grief-stricken and then unable to act. And so if you can work around that, and pace yourself, you can really miss out, and you don't need to feel burned out.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Sorry, I was just going to touch that grief stuff is really interesting because we are like living through one of the most, one of the sixth extinctions of the world, and there's so much loss and like horror, and it feels like there is a lot of ecological grief, but it also feels at the same time like we don't really know how to deal with it because we've never kind of learnt how to cope with grief of this magnitude or grief of this kind before.
Yes, but the thing is, every generation feels this.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we may feel that this is a lot worse than it was in, say, the 50s, 60s, 70s with the nuclear threat, but it's not new. This feeling of feeling helpless in the face of, you think, insurmountable odds, it's not new. This feeling of grief is not new, and we need to keep our eye on the ball and make sure we don't... Let me talk to you a little bit about what we do with the outreach group. Shall I do that?
Yeah.
Because I think that can... I think it feeds into this feeling of maybe there's nothing you can do and you're feeling burnt out. So would you like me to talk about the work we do?
Yeah, yes, please. Yes, please do.
Okay. Well, the outreach group does a lot of things. We have published a lot of stuff in the past. Like we've published little booklets, or we publish leaflets or posters. We've also do T-shirts. But one of the things that we do that really connects with the public is that we have stalls. We have information stalls. And Darabin Council is extremely supportive in this. So we've been able to do stalls at their electrification events. They've been very helpful in allowing people to the pathway of getting off gas so that they can be a gas-free and therefore hopefully fossil fuel-free household. And we've had information stalls at those events, also at their Seniors Week. Another place we've had stalls recently in the last couple of years is that Melbourne Polytechnic has a Slam Week, which is student life at Melbourne Polytechnic. And so it's a really fabulous opportunity to talk to students for an hour about their very thoughts on, you know, where they see themselves in 2050 and where they see the climate in 2050, which is where we needed to be net zero, and to offer suggestions about what they can do to get involved or whatever. And another thing we've been doing for about 7 years, a friend of myself started chalking along St George's Road. We call ourselves the Chalk and Talk Group or the St George's Road Mob, in between Miller Street and in the north and in the south, Clark Street, at the tram stops once a week on a Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. Join us at one of the tram stops. We chalk slogans, climate slogans on the footpath. We put up banners. We talk to people. We hand out information on what they can do. And also we pick up litter. And so we do something. Some people are a little bit nervous about talking to people, and they feel a bit nervous about, say, writing on the footpath. They think that they're going to, maybe they're not confident enough to do that. They think they might, it might be something against the law or whatever, but they feel as though they can pick up litter. And this is a very pro-social people thing for people to do. But what we do with the litter is that we sort it and log it onto the Litter Watch app. And the Litter Watch app is run by the Department of Environment, the Victorian Department of Environment, and its other things. And that data tells the department the sort of plastic litter that gets dropped and eventually makes its way into the bay, into the Merri Creek and then into the bay. And it gives them information they need to know how they should enact legislation to stop plastic pollution. And so that's a really sort of a pro-social thing to do. It's also information, and it's fabulous.
Yeah.
The way we stave off burnout, doing that, because we have been doing it for 7 years, is that we always mix what we do with some sort of socialisation. We're friends. We're all people who live in Northcote and live along the, most of us live along the bike path, so it's very, very local. Then we go and have coffee and solve the problems of the world. And I think that business of socialising together and making friends and doing things with friends is the key. It's the key to stopping yourself from feeling isolated or feeling depressed about that things aren't happening.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit about what Darabah Climate Action Now outreach group does. Of course, DCAN does a lot more than that.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is that you've been very adaptable to people's needs when they come into the organisation. Like if they're not comfortable talking to people or even doing very slightly naughty things like putting chalk on the footpath, you found another thing for them to do to like get involved and to like feel
that's
useful.
Right, if you come into DCAN, if you've got skills in social media, I can put things on Facebook, but I'm not interested in social media really. But other people are fantastic at social media. Other people are great at writing submissions. Other people are terrific at admin. It just depends what you're good at, and there's always something you can do.
Yeah, so what specifically do you do to like welcome newcomers and like keep people coming along?
Well, we do talk about what there is on offer, basically,
mm-hmm.
because people aren't sometimes confident to do something. Like mm-hmm. if you say, come along and be on this stall with me, and they say, oh, I don't know what to talk to people about, you say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you talk to people about. You get them talking.
Mm-hmm.
You get them talking. Just come along. Just go and buy me a coffee or something, but come along.
Mm-hmm.
And they come along, and then they realise that they actually know more than they thought they did. It's lots of fun, and people are terrific to talk to. So something like that. You have to, I suppose, say to people, "Come with me, and we'll do this together."
Yeah,
I think that's the secret. We'll do this together.
Yeah. What advice would you give for someone who wants to level up their activism from doing a little bit to doing a little bit more, or from doing nothing to start to do a little bit?
That's the thing about when we do the chalking and the talkie along St George's Road,
mm-hmm.
people say, why are you doing it in Northcote? You know, it's the People's Republic of Northcote. You know, people in your, they vote green. Your boxes come back green. And
like preaching to the converted.
Yeah, are you speaking to the converted? And I say, well, in actual fact, it's the people who are on side are the most likely to do a little bit more.
Mm.
They're the ones that are going to be active. We could go down to Preston or Reservoir and further afield, where people are less likely to be, you know, I suppose, have more life pressures on them and know less about the climate emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And we could talk to them. Yes, we could, and we do. But I think it's the people who already know and understand and accept the science that are going to do a little bit more.
Mm.
So we do encourage people to join DECAN and to read our newsletter. We have a newsletter, a monthly newsletter called Dispatch. And the great thing about this newsletter is it always gives you something that you can do, even if keeping informed, yes, but also writing a submission, or even if suggesting one paragraph for a submission into something, like, the Wallert incinerator that they want to get going up at Wallert, which is to burn all our rubbish, which is a terrible idea, of course. Or just sign on to a form submission or a form letter to a politician. And once you, even that is, that small thing is meaningful. Even, and then you can go further. You can write your paragraph, or you could, go further and write to a politician, or ring a politician, or email a politician. There's so many levels of things you can do that make a difference.
Yeah, and every level is useful.
Every level is useful. That's right. Every level.
Well, thank you for being on the show today. What events does DECAN have coming up?
Coming up. Oh, you put me on the spot.
That's okay. Is there a website where we can go to look you guys up?
Yes, the Darabin Climate Action Now has a website.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of Climate Action Now groups in Melbourne. I'm calling Marybeck. There's Yarracan.
Mm-hmm.
You could look for one in your area, or you could look up at the Darabin Climate Action. I just want to say one more thing about not stopping. If you have an issue, a campaign that you're really, really passionate about, think about the anti-nuclear campaign. Even though we still need the radioactive show, on Saturday night, I went to a function which was to say goodbye to Dave Sweeney, who was the Friends of the Earth Anti-Uranium Collective coordinator for maybe 10 years. Mm. And he's just finished 30 years with ACF as their nuclear campaigner. And he's not retiring. He's going on to do other things. But we were reminded on Saturday night that in the 70s, nuclear war was very close, and Australia was on the cusp of having a nuclear power station in most major cities.
Mm.
It was going to have dozens of uranium mines, and it was also going to be the waste dump of the world, nuclear waste dump of the world. We could have a waste dump which has 30% of the world's nuclear waste in it right now, and it's the nuclear, the anti-nuclear movement, that from the movement against uranium mining, Friends of the Earth, ACF, and all the others, that stopped the nuclear industry in its tracks. We only have one nuclear uranium mine at the moment in Roxby, and we don't have a nuclear waste dump. We have got one very small research nuclear reactor. We don't have nuclear reactors in our major cities, and that's the nuclear industry. And it's because people didn't get burnt out. People kept going. People supported each other.
Mm.
People went out for coffee and had meals together and became friends, and it works. It works.
That's such a wonderful note to end on. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome.
All right, we'll chat soon. Thank you so much.
No problem. Bye.
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 All right, we're going to go to a very short song, and then we're going to hear from Mary from Climate for Change, who's going to tell us about some events coming up. Oh, what a banger. That was Sopwith Camel with Maybe in a Dream.
Yeah, welcome back to the Climate Action Show. We are now joined by Mary from Climate for Change. Hi, Mary, how are you?
Uh-oh. All right, let's try and get Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, how are you going?
Good, thank you.
That's
thanks for having
good.
Me.
Thank you for coming on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about Climate for Change and the work you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a small non-profit, that empowers everyday Australians to have more meaningful conversations about climate change. and take action in their communities. So basically the idea behind our programs is that having conversations with our family and friends about climate change and climate action is one of the most powerful things we can do to shift public opinion. And then in turn, yeah, move our government to prioritise more climate action.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a couple of events coming up, I believe.
Yeah, so if people are interested in getting involved, there's a few ways they can do that. Our best sort of introductory thing to get involved with is coming along to one of our effective climate conversations trainings, which is basically like a two-hour crash course in the ingredients for having a good climate conversation and sort of how to tackle tricky questions and, yeah, things that work without leading to arguments. Mm-hmm. So we've got two of those online coming up on the 1st of August and the 6th of August. People can also come online through our Climate Action Club on the 30th of July, which is just a hour and a half session where we get together and everyone does a climate action on their own. So kick that off for the month. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got some events in Sydney and Melbourne if people are interested in coming to in-person stuff. Our Sydney Climate Action Club is touring the Inner West Ale Trail to talk about the gas tax and getting big polluters to pay for their climate damage. So we've got the first of those events at Hawke's Brewery this Wednesday. We're doing some other events with some partners from the Climate Justice Coalition in Sydney this Saturday, the 18th of July, and in Melbourne on the 1st of August as well. Those are big training days about making big polluters pay for climate damage. So, yeah, if people are keen to come along, they can find all of that on our website or on our Instagram. Mm-hmm. And more about our programs and stuff there as well.
Nice. And in keeping with the theme of the show, do you have any advice for people who want to maybe level up their activism or get involved more, or if they're feeling maybe burnt out by everything that's going on? Yeah, what would you say?
Yeah, for sure. I reckon because of what we focus on, I think one of the best things that you can do is practice upskilling in, having conversations with people around you. I think a lot of the time, being someone who cares about the climate can feel really isolating because we often don't talk about climate change much with our friends and family. Like, it's a bit of a downer to bring up in conversation.
Mm.
And it can lead to us feeling like we're sort of the only one that cares. Mm-hmm. Or there's so much on our shoulders. I think if we can all learn to have more meaningful conversations with those around us and talk about actually ways to take action as a community, that can help us so much to feel like we're not alone and, to be able to expand the impact that we have as well by bringing more people on board.
Yeah, nice. I think it always starts with community. It seems to be the answer for everything. thank you so much for coming on the show, Mary. So just to plug your website again, it's climateforchange.org.au, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then on socials, we're climateforchangeau everywhere.
Okay, nice. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So if you are around in Melbourne or Sydney, get along down to those events because, like Mary said, it's very great to have conversations and to discuss with people what's going on because it is... I think it's harder to feel burnt out if everyone's feeling burnt out. You share the load of it. So.
I really love the idea of that monthly climate group where they get together and do a little climate action together.
Yeah.
What a great way to like get inspired by others, but also just have like a little space in your schedule to do these things rather than feeling like I should be doing something all the time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us on the Climate Action Show today. We're going to end with a song, but before we do, do you have some topics that's coming up in your shows in the next month?
Ooh, I have some ideas.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've got anything set in stone, but I did want to do something about the narrative of progress. I kind of got into talking about it a little bit on my last episode with Anthea Lawson.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, so I think that would be cool to dedicate something to that. But just ideas at the moment, yeah. How about you?
I got a few coming up, but I'm not exactly sure what the dates will be. I've been talking to healthcare workers about climate change, what organisations are doing to prepare for things like heat waves, floods, droughts, natural disasters that impact people's health. I've also been talking to some nurses about their experiences of like weather-related healthcare issues. You know, on a hot day, elderly people come in, their salt is too low, like people having more cardiac events, people having more like drowning incidences as we're seeing in Europe right now. And I've also got a show, not sure when that's going to be coming up, about imagining climate futures. So I'm going to be talking to creators, artists, people who imagine the future for a job, about how they do it and how they would recommend that we expand our imaginations when thinking about the future.
Yeah,
I'm going to be interviewing a guy from Warhammer 40,000 about what it's going to be like in the year 40,000. So stay tuned for that one. All right, we're going to end with a song I can't pronounce, but it'll be on the website. This is by Omega. It's a Hungarian song. If you just write Omega and then a lot of G's and Z's into Google, you'll find it eventually. It's a banger. I hope you enjoy. Next up is Breadline. So stay tuned, please.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.